a.m. in Montreal.
You're listening to CJLO News. The newly created political party, Transition Montreal, is building up their slate of candidates for the upcoming municipal election. Their strategy? Scooping up well-known local figures. The Transition Montreal party was created by activists across the city to be a more progressive voice. Last month, independent councillor Craig Sauvay stepped up as the party's first leader. Here's Sauvay.
It's a transition away from the two ruling parties who have been in power since 2013 and even before. I think it's a transition where we start looking at some of the core socioeconomic issues that Montrealers are facing. One of the things that for me is going to be important in this campaign and what we want to do is to repoliticize municipal politics. In other words, we understand that, yes, picking up the garbage is important, and we have to do, dealing with residual waste is important. Parks are important. Infrastructure development is important. But the big questions, too, in terms of economic inequality, social inequality, human rights, these have to have a place in this municipal election.
Transition Montreal has now announced 7 candidates on their slate and are expecting to run candidates in all 19 boroughs of the city. Transition Montreal has been scooping up popular local figures. In Côte-des-Neiges NDG, poet and children's author Carol Ann Hoyt is the candidate. In Pointe Saint-Charles, Griffintown, Tom Seawright is running, also known as Montreal Expert, an influencer with almost 70,000 followers on Instagram. The most recent addition to this team comes from Saint-Jacques. Business owner and outspoken influencer Sergio Da Silva is running. Da Silva is known for his pro music and nightlife and anti-noise complaint positions. Here is Da Silva.
My biggest issue, and has been for a while, is that the city, regardless of what the city says, even if they, was the perfect situation for everybody involved, they're also not working with the province.
More candidates are expected to be announced in the coming days. Candidates from Transition will face off against full slates from Projet Montréal and Ensemble Montréal on Election Day, November 2nd. For the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Innes.
See your reflection. See it, see it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Voice of the Voiceless on CJLO 1690 AM, where I'm your host, Judy. I'm here with Maryam.
Hello, everyone. I'm Maryam here.
Today, we have a very special episode. We're going to be interviewing our special friend. She's a writer. She's a poet. She was a poet.
Yeah, she's a poet. She's a writer. She's a DJ composer. She's everything.
We have our friend Hiba.
Thank you guys for having me here.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Good. Good. I'm feeling well. I'm feeling excited that you're finally on the show. How are you feeling?
I'm very excited to be here today.
Okay. So we're very excited for you to be here too, and we have discussed also previously before we start the show, and we had a really rich conversation about you, about what you do, about
your culture,
your identity. So could you maybe explain to us who you are, what you do, where you come from, and just the basic information about you?
Of course. Well, my name is Hiba Babikir, as you know. I was born and raised in Montreal, Canada. However, I'm Sudanese and my parents immigrated here in the early 90s, I think. Mm-hmm. And I'm a writer. Like, in my free time, I do a lot of creative writing, a lot of poetry as well. And I'm at times a DJ as well.
Interesting.
All of that.
Love the mix.
Yeah.
And I see that you're from Sudan, and you're also born in Canada,
yes.
Right? So have you ever been to Sudan?
Yes, I went to Sudan right before I started university here, actually.
Oh, okay. Oh no way.
And since then, did you ever come back?
No.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how was the experience of going to Sudan before uni?
It was very fun, actually, yeah. Like seeing your own country for the first time. Yeah. It's a very different experience.
Oh, it was the first time?
Yes.
Oh, wow. For me. Okay. Well, so it was probably like a big shock for you, right?
100%. Yeah. Like the culture shock is mm-hmm. different, because it's one thing to see the culture from like television or music, but then to go and experience it is a whole different thing, because you can practice your culture in another country,
yeah,
but it's not the same as going back to the actual country.
Definitely, yeah. And what was like the biggest differences or the biggest culture shocks that you found over there?
Honestly, there's so much.
Yeah.
I don't know where to begin, but yeah. Honestly, I would say the people, it's a lot more community. There's a lot more community. There's a lot more interaction between people on a day-to-day life, I feel,
mm-hmm.
For sure. Yeah. Also, just even down to eating, like when you go like back home, it's just like you start off with a big meal at the beginning of the day, and then after you start your day, and then maybe at the end of the day, you'll have another meal. But versus here, it's like organized. Breakfast, lunch, dinner.
Okay,
it's
so
very different.
They're both big meals.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like right second one is start. Optional.
Oh, it's optional. So it's one big meal,
yeah.
One main big meal,
yeah.
And then the second one is either you're hungry or not, because you
yeah.
ate so much in the first meal.
Exactly.
That's
yeah.
so interesting. But
everybody like eats from like a big plate, like
yeah.
they take from a plate, put on their own.
Okay, so I'm guessing it's like your food is mostly like rice based, not really with bread, or do you guys use rice and bread, or
both?
Just mostly really
rice
okay.
and bread
okay.
depending on okay. what it's accompanied with.
Oh, that is so interesting. Now I'm hungry. I didn't eat my dinner yet, so
I have a question. Since you said like you came from you were born here in the Canada, in Canadian society, how was your culture sent back to you? Like how did your parents pass it to you?
That's a great question. Mm-hmm. Honestly, there's a lot, mainly through the cuisine, actually. Mm-hmm. With my mom's cooking really brought, like, I know a lot of Sudanese dishes like bamia, mulkhia, ful, all these things, a lot of them, like those are some of the things that are very popular. In addition to like learning how to cook, things like agashe is something that's really back home.
What is agashe?
It's a type of chicken, fried chicken.
Oh my god, that sounds so good.
With peanut butter.
Someone is hungry.
Peanut
here.
Butter.
Yes.
Wow, I didn't know that existed.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a very common dish. Mm-hmm. Other than that, music really, and literature, so okay, like books.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing like maybe your family raised you in a very knowledge-rich based Sudanese culture with like food and literature and art and music. Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, it does. Like, what would you say like was the main thing that really made you be connected with your culture?
More the music and the books, because I feel like you can really like read about your culture and see it through the eyes of somebody that's experiencing it, and you'll feel more connected. I do think that that literature brought me more of a connection, as well as the music. You learn new words that maybe you don't use here, but they're being used back home.
No. Okay, that's great, because we're going to talk about music and literature here on today's episode. So
for real,
that's a good start. So I'll start with literature. So I know before we even met last week that you write, and I've seen your stories on Instagram and your collaboration with the Sudanese community and things like that. And we would like for you to read one of your short stories today on today's show. You have sent us four stories. I've read all of them. I like all of them.
Thank you.
Especially the one on the one-eyed rat. I really like that one.
I thought I was talking about it.
I really like that one. But I remember you wanted to read the fourth one, maybe because it's your most recent, or it's like what you like the most. So we're going to let you read that out loud on our show, Voice of the Voiceless. And after that, we'll recap on what you read and ask you some questions.
Of course.
Okay, I'm excited.
Excited as well.
So this is Hiba's short story called Lady Lydia.
Go ahead.
Okay. Khartoum, Sudan, September 1980. We need to run some errands. I'll get dressed, the young woman replied. Your brother Adam is taking us. Rowan sighed internally before heading upstairs to her room. She was the eldest of three, being 19, yet still could not drive. How had life passed so quickly? It felt like just yesterday when she had been a child playing with the animals on her great aunt's farm with her brother and sister. During those days, her parents would sit in the house drinking tea with the adults while she and her brothers would spend time in the zeriba. The zeriba would be behind the house, a separate area with gates of its own. The livestock would be fed and cared for there. Food and water would be lined up along the walls, and a place with shade from the hot sun would be found as well. Adam would enjoy riding donkeys with the other boys, as it was not proper for a girl to ride. This left Rowan to spend her time with other animals, such as lambs, calves, and baby goats. Adam would even milk the cows during his visits, but Rowan never did. Which pair of earrings looks better, Adam? Rowan held one in each hand, searching her brother's face for any help. Both don't suit you, he deadpanned, holding their shopping bags. Well, your haircut doesn't suit you, she scoffed, glancing at his bald head. You know, your Uncle Amir wants us to drop off his delivery to that Greek seamstress, Lydia, Isra remarked, putting an end to their bickering. The car ride was silent. The weight of their mother's words hung in the air, stifling. Lydia was a name no one enjoyed hearing in the city. Rumors had it that she had been in Khartoum since the colonial era. Some said she was Greek, others Italian, and some claimed she was British. Nobody knew the truth, or dared to find out. In a city where everyone knew whose family lived where, which tribe they were from, where they were born, and who they were married to, it was odd. Lydia was an enigma. If she had kids, no one knew of them. If she had been married, no one knew. How she had gotten her nice house, no one knew. Lydia had no real job or traceable source of wealth, and no clear ancestry other than being white, which did not reveal much. She left her doors unlocked, yet no thief would come near her property. Women frequented her home for palm readings and fortune-telling, in addition to occasional tailoring. Few men were allowed entry, leading people to the conclusion that she was married, although her only constant companion was not a human, but a goat. Adam cut the engine after parking on the street and glanced at his mother, who was fixing her tube. Stay in the car. I'll take Rowan with me. Adam nodded, his shoulders relaxing slightly. Rowan handed the package to her mother. Isra looked at her daughter in her youthful glow. Rowan looked like both her parents, slim, of average height, with brown skin and raven-colored curls. She was beautiful. She sighed and gripped her daughter's shoulder. Before we enter, you must not talk much, and more importantly, not look too much at either Lydia or her husband. We will not eat or drink anything. They shared a look. Rowan nodded and Isra removed her hand from her. Isra adjusted her toe once again before walking towards Lydia's home, four houses from where they stood. The gates opened immediately as they heard a woman's voice. Come in, Isra. They found the doors to the house already open. The living room was eccentric. The maroon walls were bare of any crosses or depictions of Jesus or the Virgin Mary, as was custom among the Copts and Christians in the country. The opulent gold-plated furniture felt out of place with the bare wooden floor. Lydia had not moved from her seat on the settee, and her pale yellow mane had not turned to the slightest angle. She was as still as a portrait. Please have a seat. An invitation had not felt less welcoming, Rowan thought. They quickly sat down. Clip-clop, clip-clop. A large billy goat entered from the courtyard. White fur covered the terrible beast, which was the size of a donkey. It mounted the settee and laid down on its stomach, watching the guests. Lydia caressed the creature's large horns as it preened beside her on the sofa. How are you today, Isra? I'm doing well. How are you? Very well. It is a pleasure to see you today and your lovely daughter. Rowan felt a burning gaze. The hairs at the back of her neck stood. She refused to catch the creature's gaze. Thank you. You know, I'm always happy to see you. I just passed by to deliver your order from Amir's shop. Thank you. I appreciate it. You must have some tea and sweets I baked. I don't want to impose ourselves. Allow me to host you, Isra. I rarely see you. Work has taken a toll on my social life. Your husband is a very successful man. Surely you do not need to. I enjoy my work, Lydia. It is a nice pastime. The two women spoke as Rowan sat almost invisible. Her eyes could not focus on the strange woman's face, nor could she look her in the eye. The woman was surely old, yet her age could not be guessed. To do that, one would have to truly look at her, yet her presence was so oppressive it was almost impossible. Lydia continued to pet her goat tenderly as she drank tea and conversed with Isra. The goat seemed content with the affection, periodically offering refreshments and receiving a polite decline in the form of excuse. Half an hour had passed in that manner before they took their leave. Thank you for coming. Your company was delightful. Thank you for having us, Isra replied. Of course. Say hi to your family for me. Lydia had an almost playful tone as if she were referring to Adam waiting for them in the car. Of course, Isra responded politely. As they walked to the car, the burning gaze returned. Clip-clop, clip-clop. The sound of hooves was heard past the gate of the house. Adam's face broke out into a pained smile when the woman returned. The sun had just started setting. The air in the car had turned lighter. Her husband is a goat? He asked. Her partner's not Muslim, Isra replied. Of course it's not. It's a goat. Adam responded, frowning in confusion. There are two types of jinn, Muslim or non-Muslim. He's remained in the animal form. A few moments passed before the silence broke again. That is terrifying, Rowan almost whispered. They got out of the car. Adam, being the quickest to get inside their home, fear and exhaustion marred his handsome face. Alone, Isra's worried eyes met her daughter's gaze. He was looking at you because they like young women. I had to bring you with me. He wouldn't try to do anything in front of his wife. Her blood ran cold.
I love that. Thank you for sharing your story. That was very beautiful. Mm-hmm. I have just one question that popped up in my mind. The husband is the goat?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. It's like mind-bending a little bit for me.
100%.
Yeah. Wow, it's a bit absurd. I feel like, wow, okay. So the goat was looking at the woman.
The young woman, the daughter.
And the daughter thought it was the husband.
I don't know if she thought it was the husband. She wasn't sure until her mother at the end kind of explained to them.
Oh.
But she didn't want to explain before because they would be scared if they thought
Wow. I love that. Is it inspired by, you said it was inspired by, or your stories in general are inspired by folklore?
Yes.
Okay. And this one is inspired by folklore, yes. Sudanese folklore. Okay. Is it like inspired, or you just took it and like translated it?
A bit of both.
Okay. Ah, interesting. What do you think about it, Judy?
I loved it. Actually, I didn't make the connection between the goat and the guy, mm-hmm. the husband, because I know in Arabic we do curse, like, or we do like say stuff like bad things. We refer to like the people with the animals.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Interesting perspective.
But I forgot about it when I was reading the story, mm-hmm. until she mentioned it. She was like, "Oh, the husband is the goat." I was like, okay, now it made more sense, you know?
Yeah.
But it's really nice, to be honest. And I want to hear more about, like, how you got inspired, to write this. Mm-hmm. And
but I have a question just before that. I wanted to talk about, like, the story itself. Mm-hmm. I have a question, and then you can continue your question. Sorry, okay. Judy.
It was this story. But
it was about the story? Yeah, oh, you want to say it now? Okay. Sorry. So I want to just, because since we're in the summary and the what happened in the story. I noticed that the main protagonist is a female, right?
Yes.
I have a question for that. So, how would you describe this female protagonist, Lydia, in today's society? Yeah.
Okay, that's a great question. Yeah. She's more of an antagonist or anti-hero, I feel.
Okay, I don't know the difference.
Because they fear her.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, they fear her. Okay, exactly.
They're scared of her.
That makes sense,
Because she has no real roots in the country, I don't think she would be... I think she would maybe be kind of like an immigrant in a way.
Okay.
She has nobody knows who she is, where she comes from, versus the rest of the entire society knows exactly where this person comes from, has traces to their grandparents and before. Mm-hmm. So she's kind of an outsider, but she still doesn't conform as shown by in the living room.
Yeah.
She doesn't have, like, usually the people who are Christian in the country would have religious iconography inside their living room or their house. You would be able to see clearly that this is a Christian house, or Muslims, you would have the Quran or a prayer mat or something to show, like, even for Sunnis, Jewish people, there would be things that would show you in their home that they practice that faith. So she doesn't conform to that. She really she's somebody who doesn't want to conform, yet she's somehow accepted, but at the same time not entirely. Like, they see that she's there, so they have to deal with her. Mm-hmm. They do go to her for palm readings or tailoring occasionally, but it's not official. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. They're also scared of her.
Yes.
Like, you said that in the story, like, you said they're scared of her. No one goes into her house. Like, it's just like these guys that they see, mm-hmm. that probably shows that she's married. But why did you say guys? Like what's the reference? Like, guys, like, what is it? Multiple guy, not only.
Oh,
one.
I said that she has only women visit her for the most part. No men are allowed.
Oh, okay, no men.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
To show I guess a married woman's house is different. Mm-hmm. Like, it's mostly female relatives or her friends that come in.
Right. Yeah,
I think that's just something that's across the culture, the Arab culture.
Yeah. No, I also she is also valuable to society because she offers like a help and the guidance to other people. Yet she is, like, as you said, does not conform to society. So I guess as you mentioned, it's like she has some like a role in society, yet she is opposed to some aspects of society, which is super interesting to see.
Yeah, actually, if you think about it, she's like this person, that's how I see it. Like, she's this person that doesn't go by the book of how the other people are. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like scary for the other people to see it like that, to see her like that, because they don't see themselves going out of the going out of their comfort zone and doing what she's doing, whereas she's like super true to herself and actually being herself by just doing all of that doing.
I agree. And also I want to mention that, like, she's a female, right?
Yes.
And as long she's a female, she is also like kind of separated from society a little bit. Like, she's a bit of like a different person, you know, if it's like a very patriarchal society. I don't know if Sudan is a more of a matriarchal or a patriarchal society.
That's a good question.
Yeah,
honestly, I think it is more of a patriarchal classic society.
Okay.
But behind the scenes, I think it's more the women who uphold like mm-hmm. the power structures or the culture, mm-hmm, or mm-hmm. even in ancient times, we had a lot of ruling queens.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Like, one of them was, her name was Amanirenis. She's fought off the Romans. She was a one-eyed queen.
Wow.
Back in like ancient times. And I think that's what stopped Alexander the Great from taking over our land. Like, we pushed him out and it was her leadership.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating.
No way.
Yeah. That's really nice. Wow. I didn't know that. Yeah. So if it's a patriarchal society, that means the women are in the background, right?
Yeah, but they still take power.
They still
sometimes.
Have some role in society. And Lydia is also a woman in the background, yet she also serves a purpose to everyone in the village, right? So it's super interesting to hear that. And I also have a question in relationship to your Judy, do you want to put your perfect sorry about that in relationship to the your female main characters that you portray on your in your books, why do you think it's important to portray characters, women characters, or characters that have a certain personality or a certain role in society? And why do you believe it's important to include that in your short stories?
Because growing up here in the West, it's mostly main characters are usually male. Mm-hmm. It's usually the women are just background characters. Mm-hmm. They're just a love interest that lacks substance, or they're never really main characters. And then like that view is sort of pushed on in like our cultures, our areas, that women are just oppressed and they're not main characters. They're not important, when that's not really the case. Right. That couldn't be further from the truth, because a lot of the important stories or folklore is women. It's when we have a character called Fatna Samha, who, like, there's a collection and it's kind of told orally, so there's no, I don't know if there's any real recording of it, mm-hmm. but she goes on these adventures in Sudan and she finds all these different weird creatures existing, and she's a huge character in the society, and I think that's important. That's important to show that women can have adventures too. Women are active members of society, and they are storytellers.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. Wow, that's beautifully said.
Amazing.
Shedding light on characters that have not been really talking or spoken of in
like, being the voice of
in
the voices.
Western literature, and even in and maybe the Arab or Sudanese region. Mm-hmm. No, definitely, it's very interesting.
No, it's very nice how, like you said, it's like you're trying to show the women, and you're empowering women, and like having these stories would like inspire people. Oh, like actually we can do that too. We can be power, like we have the power to be for our voices to be heard in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the question I was going to ask before, it was related to like what inspired you to write the story, mm-hmm. like especially like the whole like this story or the full collection, mm-hmm. like however way you want to answer it, you can go ahead.
No, I remember this question from earlier, and mm-hmm. Honestly, it was mainly my mom who kind of told me, like, you know, I have a bunch of folk tales that I think you should write, and I think that it might put you on the map as a writer. And at first I wasn't really interested. In my eyes, I was like, I wanted to write historical fantasy or dark fantasy, something like that. I didn't want to write an anthology series. I wanted to build a character throughout multiple chapters, you know. Mm-hmm. But I thought about it, and then I got in a writing rut, you know, a creative block. And I was thinking, you know what, actually, I enjoy listening to some of these stories, and I might as well share them before somebody else comes and shares them before I do.
Yeah, you take the first step. Yeah.
So it was a mix of, honestly, urgency as well as just representation. I did think it was important. I did think that we have interesting stories to tell too, and we're not really heard. Mm-hmm. So we should share that. And it's something that also was educational, because I learned a lot about my culture that I didn't learn mm-hmm. before through these folk tales. So that was very important too.
Yeah.
No, it's very interesting, like how it inspired you to like actually do the work, since you said like, oh, no one did it before. So you're kind of like the first person to actually say these stories. And it's interesting how they're shown, because like, even if you write one story, it's going to be harder for you to show stuff. Like, I feel like when you had this collection, when I read the multiple mm-hmm. stories, I was able to learn more about your culture. Yeah. Like, the first story was about marriage and, like, the woman, like the whole thing, it was like just about like simplicity, mm-hmm. and then it became complex. Yeah. Like one after the other, I was like, okay, wow, like it became complex, and it was like very, very interesting way. Like, it's my first time reading this type of genre of like folklore.
Yeah.
I've never heard of it before, actually, too.
Okay.
So, like, I don't really know what it means. So if you also like explain to people what folklore is.
Well, folklore is tales that are passed down from generation to generation, usually orally. And it's just a way for people to learn about their culture, and also sometimes it's told to scare little kids into, you know, sleeping at their bedtime. Other times it's just to warn people of any region that they're going to that they might not have gone to before. It's complicated to explain, but I do think I would define it as that, it's just, it's very cultural. It's specific to each country. Everybody has their own folklore it's unique take on what people fear. And it also represents society's fears and they're manifested in these sort of monsters these situations.
So I'm guessing folklore, at least in Sudanese folklore, there's a lot of, and from what I read also in your stories, what I felt, there's a lot of, fantasy, a lot of absurdism, a lot of
exaggerations.
Non-realistic actions or creatures or things like that. Yeah. Is it common in Sudanese folklore?
Yes. Okay. Very common.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And they do that because they want to scare people or they want to show a point, right?
Yeah, it's usually to tell some sort of moral. Mm-hmm. There's some sort of moral lesson at the end of each one in some way.
Mm-hmm. Because I think the basis of folklore is it's not the basis, but there's a common trend in folklore where like you have always this like different non-human creature speaking to a real human, and they really like have a discussion and they get close to each other, and then at the end of the folklore story, they learn a lesson. So either the non-human creature gives a lesson to the human, or the human gives it to the creature, and then finally you find this like moral lesson at the end of the story. So that's like the basis, I think, of folklore. And I guess Sudanese folklore has those similarities, and it also has very specific things tailored to its own country. So it's a very interesting genre, actually.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you for having me.
No, of course. We're gonna go on break for a few minutes and then do rest and everything, and we'll come back in a few minutes. So enjoy, everyone.
Program made up of local films and international new releases, classics and little known nuggets, as well as short films and family screenings. Our tickets are among the cheapest in Montreal, $10 for a regular entry or $8 for students, children and seniors. We also offer 6 ticket movie cards for even more savings. Come see us at Casa d'Italia, just across from Jean Talon Metro, and visit cinemapublic.ca to discover our programming. Le Cinéma Public for a lively cinema.
Do you want to have a discussion about movies?
All right, gang, let's really nail it this time. Here we go.
And have the iconic sounds of cinema? Bum.
Well, then tune in to At the Movies every Tuesday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. only on CJLO 1690 a.m. with your hosts,
Remy
and Danny.
This is how we do it. Da, 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 da. Hey, I never asked you.
Yeah.
You like guacamole? Ah! Run, run! Oh, God! Run! Run!
No. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Voice of the Voiceless on CJLO 1690 AM. I'm your host, Judy, and we have Miriam with us.
Hello.
And we have Hiba, our special guest for today. And
I have also a quick question, maybe one of the last questions about the book. I don't know if you answered this question already. Maybe you did. I want to know maybe the main themes of your stories. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing like a female main character, female maybe struggles related to women in society, things like that. Do you have maybe other main themes that you usually focus on when you write? If you could share any.
Fear of the other, the supernatural.
Okay. Fear of the other. Can you explain what do you mean by that?
Well, a lot of these people, they don't know like what they're facing. They don't understand it. Like in the story I just told with Lydia, they don't understand her. Wow. They fear her because they don't understand her. Yeah, and they don't. She's not conforming. She's not the same as them. She's very starkly different.
Yeah.
In them.
Yeah. Wow, no, that's interesting. Fear of the other. Yeah.
Actually, that's so true. This is like so, like a lot of people in our culture, like they see people who are like abnormal. Oh my gosh, like they're gonna, like if you go with people who are like a bit unique, they're like, okay, be careful because you don't know who's this person, you know, just because we're not the same. Mm-hmm. Like even like if you go to non-Arabs or you go to Arabs, same thing. They're gonna be like, oh, fear, you know? It's kind of like when we come here as Arabs and they're like, okay, don't meet non-Arabs, like Westerns, because you know, like they fear them in a way. Yeah.
No, and also fear creates conflict. Like when you start fearing the other, you might like start fighting, like in a way. You start like trying to protect yourself, protect everyone else around you, and that means you have to like sometimes you know, show violence and and cause violence towards the other. So that's an interesting theme actually to have in your stories. And what is your process of writing your stories, if you have one? Maybe you get influenced by someone or something, or you start slow, or you free write. Like what do you usually do?
Honestly, I free write a lot of them. Okay. I have a set of plot points or an outline that I basically, I'll either go on the phone with my mom and my grandmother back home in Sudan, and she'll tell me some stories, and then I'll just note them down. And especially a lot of them I've already heard on my visit, then I just go back to make sure I have these plot points correctly, and then I choose one, and then I'm like, this is the one I want to write, this is the one that I have more energy for right now, and I just write a
Wow, that's amazing. So you free write, then you like try to summarize it, synthesize it, and maybe like add things, remove things, and edit it. Okay.
And honestly, all this is just kind of a rough draft. Obviously, I think it needs to get fixed. I even edited the Lydia story today, actually.
Really? Before. Yeah. It's always a work in progress.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
But even like without the editing, it was like really good, and like just reading it was really nice.
I really
the draft itself was like amazing, you know? So imagine after re-editing in the end, it'll be perfect.
Yeah.
But who inspired you to write? Like, who is your favorite writer?
My favorite writer recently has been Tayyip Saleh for a few years, actually, ever since I started with his book, Season of Migration to the North. My brother had it, and then I wanted to read it, but he was like, you know what, you're too young. This was when I was like 16, and I didn't understand. I was like, how am I too young? So then a few years later, I found the book again, and I decided to read it, and it shocked me and impacted me so deeply, and it gave me a new understanding on a lot of things. And it even impacted my style in this book. My first chapter is how I was in Sudan and how I was talking to my mother and the state of the country and how they think they're moving to war. Mm-hmm. And this was like a few months before the actual war broke out. I did kind of get inspired by his writing style. It's shaped my writing style in this book as well.
Wow. Can you explain to us a bit about his book, Migration of the West, right?
Season of Migration to North. It's a modern, I think it was modern literature, a book on post-colonialism.
Okay.
So the main character, there's a narrator that's nameless, and there's this character called Mustafa Saeed, and he lives in Sudan for a bit, then he goes abroad to Britain, and that's where he has all these stories on his life in the West. Then he comes back, and the narrator is the one who has to struggle with having his secrets, this man's secrets, his the jarring difference in his life there and back here. And it's just a good tale on how colonialism impacts you even after it's done. It right. still impacts a culture, shapes how people act. Like, it's never really gone.
Right. Yeah, that's very, very interesting. And I love how the fact that he, as you mentioned, I believe he lived outside of Sudan. Mm-hmm. So he experienced, like, the life outside of Sudan, mm-hmm. the challenges, the struggles, the achievements, all what he did over there. And he decided to find the contrast or find mm-hmm. comparisons between Sudan and the West.
Yes.
Is his books fictional, or is it like a biography of his life, or is it like very real? Is it like how do you explain the genres that he includes in his books?
It's a bit of magical realism, okay. I would think. Okay. Or some people think that Season of Migration to the North is autobiographical. An autobiography
okay.
of him and his experience,
mm-hmm.
but nobody really has an answer on that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. So maybe how he wrote it down, mm-hmm. he like tried to make the reader have mixed feelings, or intentionally or not even intentionally. Mm-hmm. So
he definitely sparked a lot of outrage and controversy with that book.
And you said it was banned in Sudan,
yes,
right?
Yes, it was okay. banned for a while.
Wow. Is most of his books are banned, or only that one?
Only that one.
Oh, only that one. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
What type of controversial stories did he mention that people were, if you remember, of mm-hmm. course, like one story that you remember that kind of out made people feel like raged, or like, oh, we don't want that?
Well, he basically, one of the things that he did that was really unspoken of at the time was use a sex scene in literature, okay. Arab literature in the 1900s.
Mm. That's oh, wow, yeah.
Unheard of.
That's very controversial.
Yeah. But I don't think that was the worst thing in my personal opinion. I think mm-hmm. it was more so he's painting a real picture of the culture and the society at mm-hmm. the time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't want the real. They don't want the truth. At times it can be ugly.
Right.
And he points out hypocrisy. He points out how women were treated in, let's say, the villages versus in the cities, and how even like if people in the West think they're free, women in both areas, they're not fully free. They're just oppressed in different ways.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that angered a lot of people.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. That's very interesting.
Yeah, it's understandable though for the mm. people to be enraged, but at the same time, like as you said, like they're not willing to see the truth because they believe what they're living in is like the best mm-hmm. Life they could ever live, and they don't want to like actually change that, you know, mm-hmm. even though what he said. But did it like afterwards when it got, how did it get unbanned after?
I'm not sure how okay. it got banned. I know he got an award for Arabic literature
mm-hmm. okay.
and was called like the genius of Arabic literature
okay.
in
okay.
that era.
If I understand, he was against the things that the government was doing, right?
And not exactly okay. the government, more the people, more the society people. Itself.
Okay.
He wasn't even criticizing the government.
So was he banned by the people or by the government?
He was banned by the government, okay. that book specifically.
Okay, and the people were with the government, I believe.
Yes, I think 100%.
Everyone, okay. Wow, that's interesting, because usually what I hear in like countries mm-hmm. that are facing struggles, usually sometimes the people, they want to speak up and they want to, mm-hmm. You know, fight for their rights and things like that. But what I'm hearing is that the people were
right now.
Yeah, were like maybe oppressed, or were like they maybe wanted to say something and they couldn't, or they were maybe a bit blind and didn't really see another aspect of their lives that could be mm-hmm. maybe ameliorated. So wow, that's interesting to see. Yeah. So I think we can move on with the music part
we can
of the
go
interview
with the music? Yeah, for sure. We can have a question that leads maybe to the music mm-hmm. a bit. I have this question that I've written. It's why do you think it's important to represent the Sudanese culture here in Canada?
I think it's important for representation, just as we're already here in Montreal, is a huge mix of different cultures. And a lot of people find representation, find home outside of home. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important with the growing amount of Sudanese people coming here mm-hmm. that they should have the representation that maybe I didn't have as a kid here growing up. So I think that's why it's very important.
Mm-hmm. So you're bringing that legacy and you're mm-hmm. like starting off and yeah, that's super interesting. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
So you said like you didn't have that like a mentorship kind of like someone representing you
here.
when you were young, right?
Yes.
Only your family like were the only ones that were supporting you to be able to
yeah.
to learn about your culture.
Mm, and how was it at school here mm-hmm. in Canada when you were like in primary, elementary school? Because I feel like when you're young, you always wanna try to maybe find yourself mm-hmm. or find people that you can relate to and be friends with. How was that experience for you as a Sudanese Canadian woman at school?
It was hard. It was mm-hmm. very hard actually, because at times I'm like, I'm classified as an Arab, at times I'm classified as a Black, and it's just like I'm not enough for either side, if I'm African, if I'm Arab. Mm-hmm. And it confuses people. Yeah. It really does, because you're an African country that speaks Arabic.
Right, right.
It's very hard to explain. It's very hard to find like people to understand that, especially if they're not used to it. They don't see it. Like in Toronto, you see a lot of Sudanese people, they're not confused. Mm-hmm. But here it's not the same at all.
Mm-hmm. So like trying to find your identity mm-hmm. was hard for you at school.
Yeah.
Okay. And how did you try to cope with that? Did you try to like learn more about your Sudanese culture, or did you try to distance yourself from it?
At first I didn't distance myself, mm-hmm. but I just wasn't focused on it as much. Okay. I wasn't interested.
Okay.
Until after like maybe around stage up mm. that time is when I gained more interest in just learning about it. Mm. But I've always been interested in horror.
Okay like specifically horror in your region or just
short stories
yeah. okay coming back to what you're writing too.
Yeah.
It sounds like has
especially
themes.
Reading Goosebumps.
I used to love Goosebumps. I read all of them when I was little. Yeah. Wow.
I remember you mentioned to us when we saw each other how you like first started writing. Mm-hmm. Your writings were about horror.
Yes.
Horror writings.
Oh.
Yeah.
All of my stories in high school were just early high school was just short horror stories. I don't even know how I came up with them at the time, but I'd always surprise my teacher. She'd be like, "Hiba, you wrote this. That's interesting. Let's read it."
Oh, how did this love for horror come for you? Like,
how this, where like, did the this need come from? Also yeah. to write horror movies?
I don't know. Mm. I actually have no idea. I just know that around that time, I think the film was coming out, mm-hmm. the Stephen King movie. And I was like, oh my gosh, I kind of just want to write stories like him. Mm. And it was a little subconscious, a little like both. And I just thought, you know what? Like, I have interesting stories to kind of come up with that he probably doesn't have those same stories because it's a different region. You know, he's not going to have the same definition of horror, those like werewolves, vampires. We don't really have that.
Yeah.
In
you
our
have Jin and the
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's so true. it's a very similar but like unique way of
yeah.
like explaining this. As you said, like it's something that we can really like you guys can like we can relate to.
Yeah.
Whereas here, like the vampires are very like fictional, but
yeah,
like the you what you're writing is like kind of real, but in the same time, horror,
no.
like fictional, but not fictional.
It's kind of absurd, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like both. It, mm-hmm. it can go to like both ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We shifted,
yeah.
We love your stories.
We love,
know?
Yeah.
I love being here.
Oh, thank you.
Of course. Okay, let's go back to the music. So you said when we first talked about culture and stuff, you said one of the main things too was music, mm-hmm. which was a way to show culture.
Yeah.
And can you tell us about Sudanese music, such as the Zanig music
mm-hmm.
that you mentioned? Maybe explain
yeah.
to us what it means. Like, what is it, the type of music and stuff like that?
Well, Zanig music is a type of Sudanese EDM would be the best way to explain it. It's very electronic, not lyric focused at all. It's just dance music. And it actually it's very recent. I wasn't really considered a type of music. It wasn't well respected at first. It came from the Khartoum working class. I think right before the revolution, like I think leading up until and it's still going on, like people are still making Zani music. It's played at weddings. It's played everywhere. People enjoy it. They enjoy dancing, enjoy listening to simple lyrics that they just don't really have to think about as much. And it does show like every different person has their own like thing that they make a story out of anything. Mm. They make a story out of one of them is Saiga Raksha. They is the person who the driver of the rickshaw.
Rickshaw is is it like a truck? Like
no, it's like those, you know, those vans that are open on both sides. They're like, it's not a van as much as it's like a really small, not very safe.
Kind of like a bicycle, but with like, wheels.
Like a car, like a really mini car, mm-hmm. and it's open on both sides. Oh. Like people walk, people sit in like the back. It's wow. very
There's
small.
There's a word for that?
Yeah, wow, it's called, it's found all over the mm-hmm. Middle East too.
What is it called?
Rickshaw in rickshaw. English is how you would spell it.
Oh, okay. Wow. So, okay. So they would play the music in the rickshaw, or the song would be about
the song. There's a song okay. about that. There's okay. a song about anything.
Kind of.
Yeah. There's smaller wheels, maybe.
Rickshaw. Okay. No, wait. Let's write the Sudanese rickshaw, maybe.
Yeah. Then you could describe it on in the show. Mm-hmm.
It's also in Egypt. You find it the same exact one.
Okay. It's like a traktor, like something like. So basically, it's like a kind of like a van, minivan, mm-hmm. very minivan. It's open from both sides and it only has three wheels. It doesn't have four wheels. Oh. So front, wait, I'll show you. It's like this.
Okay.
So front wheel and then two wheels in the back and there's a driver mm-hmm. and it's this one, yeah, right?
Exactly.
Driver and someone sits next to the driver. I think there's one seat and there's two seats in the back. Or three seats. Three people can fit. Okay. That's a. I don't think I've seen it. I've seen it, but not in Syria. I've seen it in Lebanon once.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting. Okay, continue.
Yeah, no. So it's just. It's really. It's called like we also call it Aghani al-Hajij, which just means like songs that you can like just dance to and you know get fired up, kind of energy wise.
Okay. Okay. No, that's interesting. So I'm guessing it's upbeat music, right?
Very upbeat.
And does this music like allow for the working class to express themselves yes. about their struggles and about their challenges and things like that? Okay, interesting. Because it reminds me also of North African music, yeah. like Rai music yeah. and things like that. Like it's very upbeat, very yeah. dance music. Yet, like if you actually listen to the lyrics, it's very very deep and like there's a lot of meaning. And like mm-hmm. usually people express their challenges they face in society and yeah. like the struggles and the resistance towards like you know, yeah, higher elites or colonists. So yeah, definitely, yeah,
for sure. What feelings does this music bring to you?
Honestly, it brings me a rush of energy most of the time. It's also joyful too because like you can move around, you can get people to dance, and I feel like it reaches more people versus a more respected genre of music in Sudan okay. or like there is the bigger artists that are like considered classics and the golden age mm-hmm, of Sudanese mm-hmm. music. This is kind of just it can reach anyone because the lyrics are simple enough, I think, that anybody could really catch on if mm-hmm. they understand Arabic mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. even if they don't understand, they can still find the beat just nice enough to dance to.
Mm-hmm. A beat is catchy and usually yeah. people like grab on that. Yeah. That's really interesting.
It's amazing to explain. I'm sorry we don't have enough time, mm-hmm. but I have one last question to ask you. One last question to ask you, and then we'll end it with playing one song, and then that's it mm-hmm. for today. My question is, if you would tell one thing to your younger self or mm-hmm. to the people who are trying to be connected with their culture, mm-hmm. like a... one thing you would say, what would it be?
Yeah, what would you say to your younger self, mm-hmm. maybe who was struggling to really cope with your identity mm-hmm. and things mm-hmm. like that?
I mean, it gets better and mm-hmm. there's always a way to connect and to find your place in both societies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
Yay! Amazing. You just survived your first episode.
Thank you so much, Hiba, for being on the show. And I'm glad that you came. And I'm glad that you shared your culture and the literature, Sudanese literature with us. And we hope to have you also maybe very soon on the show. Maybe share your DJ performance, share your future DJ endeavors with us. So, yeah, that's very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
thank you for having me. Yeah. I'm very excited.
Yeah, thank you so much. We're going to be playing Zola by Rexus Sal, DJ Teddy Sam. Teddy Jam. Do you want to explain very quickly?
It kind of is. I'm not sure it's classified as Zenig for this specific, but it does get people dancing. It's, I guess, a more relaxed song, but
okay. Yeah, let's hear it.
It's Sudanese.
Okay. Well, enjoy, everyone.
Bye.
See you next week.
Heck yeah. Rex is on a beat, wake up, boy, energy, yeah.
I'm sick.
SL, yeah. DJ Teddy Jam, yeah.
Let's go.
It's Joey's on the beat.
Yaya Zola. 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 Yaya Zola.
Habiba Galbi Banadi Le. كل حياتي ليه بسرح في جمال إله وأنا ماسك كده
دي قمر هلا وتدلع حلوة سمحة في عينا ما بتتخلى حتشلع بتوبة وطرحة والحنة دي حلا تتايا ست البنات بزا تتايا حضران صفات تتايا دي ملك وماشي في الوطة تتايا زول حلا تتايا ست البنات بزا تتايا حضران صفات تتايا بلكوا ماشي في الوطن طيور
يا زولا
يا زولا يا يا يا